This episode is brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink. Be honest, are you procrastinating by listening to this podcast? It's okay. You just need Rockstar Focus. Choose from three delicious flavors, each crafted with ingredients for an ideal energy and mental boost, like Lion's Mane, 200 milligrams of caffeine, and zero sugar. Visit rockstarenergy.com to learn more. At least 75 milligrams of caffeine has been shown to help improve attention.
From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod,
a podcast about Black culture from Blackness's biggest fans. I'm Brittany Luce.
And I'm Eric Eddings. Today, we're going to talk about movies. Specifically, we're going to talk about two movies, If Beale Street Could Talk and A Star Is Born. It feels kind of strange that two of the biggest films out this year are these like big, epic, dramatic romance movies. But when Brittany and I saw them recently, we could not stop talking about them.
Nope.
Oh, my God.
Mm-mm.
And we couldn't help but compare them to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Since we were talking about Beale Street and A Star Is Born every single day, we figured we might as well hop into the studio and have a nice spoiler-free conversation about what made these two movies so amazing. If Beale Street Could Talk is directed by Barry Jenkins, and it's based on the 1974 James Baldwin novel of the same name. It tells the story of a young Black couple, Tish and Fonnie, whose love is tested when Fonnie is wrongly accused of a violent crime and is subsequently incarcerated.
You ready for this?
I've never been more ready for anything in my whole life. You know I love you, no matter what happens.
I'm yours in your mind, and that's it. You and me all the time.
Fonnie, there's something I gotta tell you.
The performances by Kiki Layne as Tish Rivers and Stephon James, who plays Fonnie Hunt, are like so incredible.
So good. So
good. Oh my God. All the heartstrings were pulled.
All mine were pulled. I mean, honestly, I think we both cried through at least 55% of this movie.
Mine is sadly about 20% higher than that.
Okay, so we also are talking about A Star Is Born, which is about a country superstar who crosses paths with a young cabaret singer. And they like fall crazy in love while dealing with fame, creative freedom, and addiction. And basically, like, as her career takes off, his personal struggles, they bubble up to the surface. Just bubble up. Bradley Cooper plays the country star Jackson Maine, and Lady Gaga is the cabaret singer Ali Campana.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Okay.
Tell me something, girl.
Do you write songs or anything?
I don't sing my own songs.
Why?
I just don't feel comfortable.
Why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Almost every single person has told me they liked the way I sounded, but that they didn't like the way I look.
I think you're beautiful.
Bradley Cooper actually also directed the film, and he did a lot of work to make this larger-than-life relationship feel really real.
Yeah, he really did. And both of these movies are about people who are, like, fighting against great odds to be or stay in love.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, while Beale Street and A Star Is Born, they both use different techniques to achieve this very believable love. I think we both kind of realized that the love in Beale Street, though, felt a bit more, like, urgent and intimate.
Yeah. And so we wanted to take a closer look at both movies to see the different ways they each made us feel the love at the center of those stories. And typically, you know, we maybe just talk in passing, but mm-hmm. we're going to do it today, right now, in the studio.
Really?
Yes. In a little segment that we like to call Let's Get Into It. Okay, so in thinking about the differences between these two films, I wanted to start out talking about one of the most obvious aspects of the films, the visuals. So where Beale Street used a lot of close shots to depict this deep intimacy, I think A Star Is Born employs a lot of wider shots to place us like kind of in the star-studded world of Ali and Jack.
Hmm.
So like, I thought that both movies were gorgeous.
Yeah.
If you had told me that somebody was going to put Lady Gaga in a bright orange mermaid wig and I was going to love every second of it, I wouldn't have believed you. So like in A Star is Born, we're like always in the position of the observer. And yeah. I think that part of that is like we're seeing these people with this extraordinarily ridiculous life that none of us will ever have. Eric, you know Jackson Maine.
It's possible. You never know.
Late life. Truth be told, it's more likely that any of us will end up in jail,
yeah.
like Bonnie in Beale Street.
Too soon?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's more likely that any of us will end up in jail than actually end up. I think it's more likely for anybody that they'd end up arrested in jail than they'd end up like as like a famous pop star. So like when you're watching A Star is Born, a lot of the time like you're looking at these huge scenes. So you're looking at the Grammys or you're looking at Saturday Night Live backstage. You're looking at like a huge concert like Glastonbury or Coachella. They do a great job of placing you in the world of those characters, but still not your world. Like you see them falling grandly in love and they give you enough intimacy, like to sort of pull you behind the curtain and make you feel like you understand their relationship. But like, we're never really fully in their shoes. I think that's where a lot of the central appeal comes is like that voyeurism where you're just sort of like, ooh, stars, just like us. So let me tell you about a moment in A Star is Born where you really feel like you're getting that intimate peek into their lives. So at this point in the movie, megastar Jackson Maine, he's just taken the unknown cabaret singer, Allie, on stage for the first time, and he made her sing this song that she wrote in front of all these people, and they have this amazing performance, and then they go back to this hotel, they hook up. You know, he had some struggles, but he got it together. He rallied, as the kids say. I was in Allie's shoes. I was like, yo, you just had sex with this super famous guy. That's so cool. I was like, I got the urge to be like, I want to text my friends. This is crazy.
This inner monologue, though.
But like, I think anybody would feel that way.
Sure,
but then the next morning is the scene that got me. The next morning, Allie and Jackson are sitting together in front of this huge breakfast spread. Mm-hmm. There's like all these plates. They're wearing these plush robes. The furniture at the table, the dining table, which is in a part of his hotel suite, is large enough that Allie can curl up in it with her knees up. They're not hitting you over the head with the fact that this is like the type of hotel room that most of us will never see.
Yeah.
That's like when the actual like intimacy sort of like starts. And I loved that. Like, it wasn't too stylized, but there are enough details within the shot that put me in the world of Jackson Maine and let me know that Allie was entering like this famous person's world.
One time my brother came home. I was playing on this upright. We used to always have in our den. And I was like in my own world. No one was ever home. And he comes home to take care of my dad who was sick. And he's sitting there and he's looking at me. And I swear to God, he looked at me like I was special or something. And just kind of filled me up. And I should have never told you.
Why?
Because it's embarrassing.
It's so sweet.
I went to go see this movie with my partner. And like, we were watching the scene and my partner leaned over and he was like, we used to do that when we first met. He's going to hate that I said that. But it's true. It's like, you know, you meet, you hang out, hang out all night. And then you, like, get up and just, like, laze around and, like, make pancakes or, like, go to brunch or whatever.
They're trying to find, like, those pockets of kind of, like, normalcy within this madness, I guess you would say.
Exactly. And the thing I felt like the total opposite with Beale Street is instead of, like, zooming out the way that they do in A Star is Born to sort of give you this larger, grander context of where their relationship is and who they are in the world, Beale Street is just up in your face. Mm-hmm. Barry Jenkins is becoming, I think, more well-known for these, like, really haunting, like straight on, like
shots,
eye contact shots. He doesn't rely so much on dialogue. It's more so just like allowing his camera to sort of follow the character and really sort of like look into their soul, I guess. I know that's kind of like a corny way of putting it.
No, it's not that corny. I mean, the thing about it is like this movie and Moonlight too, like the stairs. There's so much
people
in the stairs.
People be staring at these movies. But with those like head on close-ups, you just see an entire range of emotions play out in like 10 or 20 seconds on a character's face. And when you are really looking at someone like that, you no longer become the spectator. You're like almost a participant in their story.
Yeah, when Stephan James as Fonny is staring at you and he looks real sad, but also strangely hopeful, you know what I'm saying? Like you want to empathize with him in that moment for sure.
Yeah. Whatever emotion that the character is feeling, you cannot you absolutely cannot escape it. Like, there's this one moment I think of from Beale Street. Mm-hmm. It's when Tish, young, gorgeous Black woman, she's 19. She's, you know, she's fallen in love for the first time. She's engaged to her fiance, Fonny. And there's this moment where you look at Tish's face. You're not like eye level, but you're slightly below her. You're looking up at her, but you're dead like center in front of her. And she's like staring up at the sky, and it's the golden hour and the light is hitting her face. And this fucking ridiculously happy grin spreads across her face. And like whenever you're truly in love with somebody, I think there's always a moment that you can go back to or a moment or something that you can, a feeling that you can access where, you know, where you realize that you and this person are about to embark on something together. It could be a road trip. It could be a wedding. It could be, you know, moving in together, whatever. But it feels like you've taken a big step to forming your own identity as a couple, where it's just sort of like you against the world. And you just see that completely play out over her face.
Yeah.
And like, okay, she's a Black girl. So am I. So I'm looking at her and I'm like, I look just like Kiki Layne. Not true. But I see myself. I see myself. Yeah. But also, like, there's just more to it than that. It's just sort of like I become her confidant in a way that I cannot be for these characters in A Star is Born. And it just changes my relationship to the story. I can't help but put myself or my hopes or my own experiences in their shoes.
Yeah. Like, the setting is beautiful. Like, Barry Jenkins makes 70s Harlem look so, like, gorgeous and rich, right? But like in that shot that you're talking about, all you really need is her face, because all Fonny really needs is her face. Their focus is
Eric,
so...
Eric, you preaching today. Preaching.
Their focus is so tightly on each other. You're meant to remember that. You're meant to go back, like you said, and remember, you know, those aspects, of, like that aspect of love that you had as well, where like the only thing that really mattered, you could be, you know, like Harlem could look the best it has ever looked. And it does not matter, because Kiki Layne's blowout, you know what I'm saying, is like really killing it at the moment in the sunlight, you know?
Yeah. It's an interesting point that you made about 1970s Harlem. Like, I read a couple reviews of the film that were racist. And and it was like it was a lot of complaints where people felt like visuals or like how beautiful they were or the swell of the score were like all like too pretty or romanticized for the surroundings of the characters. Even one man wrote about how he thought Stephon James was too good looking to play Fonny. I'm like, he's a character from a book.
Okay.
They give one description of him from when he's a kid. Like, where are you coming from with this? But it sort of just felt like mainstream white critics and possibly white audiences are not used to seeing Black people be in love like that.
Yeah.
The thing is that everybody feels love the same way. And also too, like, if I look outside of my block, there's one building that's completely abandoned. It's going to stay that way. There's another building where at least twice a year, whoever it is doesn't pick up their trash for like 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
And there's rats because I live in New York. But that doesn't change my ability to access emotion. It doesn't change the way that I see my partner. It doesn't change the way that I feel about being in love. And it's very interesting to see non-Black critics react to seeing Black people feel each other in this way.
Yeah. Also, I mean, even just to the setting, like, I don't, like, that same block, I imagine, you know, there's probably a cold winter day where you walk out and you're blocking lane. Whew, damn, okay, we're doing this today. But there's probably another day, you know what I'm saying, like one, you know.
Summer right after trash pickup. In the summer right after trash pickup. It's
where
the
you
truth.
Walk outside and you're like, damn, this is, I live in a beautiful neighborhood. It's a beautiful block.
Exactly.
You know, and one might feel that way because of the nature of their circumstances. Let's say how in love you are at the moment. And maybe somebody wants to reflect that in a film that is all about that love, you know? Let me think.
So, like I said, I loved A Star is Born.
Yeah.
But by virtue of the way that the visuals are set up, I'm never going to feel as close to Allie and Jackson as I do to Tish and Fonny.
Yeah. But, I mean, and, you know, that's not necessarily a loss.
That's true. They were going
different.
Through it. Allie and Jackson went through it.
So, I want to talk about the music in these two films. In A Star is Born, the music is great, right? But it's basically a character in the film. It's one that's kind of like meant to stand out and be celebrated. While the music in If Beale Street Could Talk is really meant to just kind of like push you to empathize with the deep deep love and sadness of these characters, and to keep those emotions present through the very last second of the film. Let me break it down. So, A Star is Born.
Yeah.
This is a movie you go to for the music. It's like...
the music was off the chain.
Yeah. And you know that coming in. You know what I'm saying? Like, the music is known to be good. And in the movie, they use it for, like, maximum effect. A lot of times, there will be scenes where people are kind of, like, talking. They use scoring, like, pretty sparingly there. Mm-hmm. Because there are these, like, big sweeping scenes that are going to come in. You're going to get a song, and it's going to make you feel all the emotions. And you're going to just, like, be there kind of in awe. Right? Mm-hmm. In A Star is Born, the music is showing you that these two people are perfect for each other because they make music that is perfect together, right? Like, they these are two ridiculous talents,
mm-hmm.
and when they come together, something special happens, yeah. right? When you first start out, you're seeing Bradley Cooper as Jackson Maine, and he's on stage, he's singing, I think it was like, what was it, Black Eyes or something like that? What was the name of that song?
Yeah.
That first song?
Black Eyes Open Wide.
And so, you know, when he first comes in, you're like, oh, man, this guy's got it. He can, like, Bradley Cooper can actually sing. Who would have thought? And then you see Allie, and you get this first little taste of Allie singing.
Des yeux qui font baiser les miens, en rire qui se perd sous sa blouche. Voilà le portrait sans retouche de la moquelle, j'apporte rien.
And you can tell that, like, these two people are special. The scene that best highlights how this works is a scene where they kind of like build this song called Shallow.
Tell me something, boy.
They're sitting in a parking lot. All you hear is like the ambient cars in the background.
Aren't you tired trying to fill that void? Or do you need more?
It's super quiet. It almost comes out like a whisper.
Ain't it hard keeping it so hardcore?
Is that me?
That's you.
You just write that now?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I started writing this song the other day. Maybe that could work, like as a chorus or something. I don't think if I can remember it.
I'm off the deep end. Watch as I dive in. I never meet the ground.
In this moment, all you're supposed to really feel is that she feels comfortable enough to write music with him. She mm-hmm. feels comfortable enough to, like, give him some of this impeccable talent.
We're far from the shallow now.
Holy shit.
And he feels confident enough to help pull this out of her. He wants to work with her because he feels this, like, crazy talent that she has inside. And he wants to help bring that out as long as it's the music he likes. And not the one she likes. But it comes together in this, like, really, really quiet scene so that when Shallow comes back a little later in the film mm-hmm. and they're on stage and she's performing it, it, like, comes out with this force. That is how this movie uses music. It's supposed to remind you, like, when these two people are together, you're going to hear something special. And If Beale Street Could Talk also uses music really well, but it does it in this, like, completely, completely different way. So there's not a ton of dialogue in the film. There's all these, like, moments where you're just kind of sitting with them as they just, like, stare at each other. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of marinating in their feelings. And at all those times, they're not sitting in silence. There is music playing. It is telling you everything you're supposed
it's
to feel.
So good. It's so good.
It makes their love feel almost overwhelming. The music is loud, is a negative, like loud evokes this like negative thing, but it's just like so present. And it has this like double, it's almost like, almost one would say double consciousness to it, but that's like a bad way to put it.
Yeah, that ain't the one. Try again.
But no, but it has this like, it's making you feel two things at the same time. It makes you feel this like amazing happiness, but also this amazing sadness.
Yeah.
So the score itself was done by this guy, Nicholas Britell. Shout out to him.
He murdered it. He killed it.
Held it down. And it almost like exclusively uses like strings and pianos. It's a very like it's built on orchestra.
It's like, you know, an old fashioned, huge, big love story feel.
Yeah. There's this one song that serves as kind of like the linchpin of the entire film. It's a song called Eden. It kind of like starts in super, super slow, right? And it just kind of builds. Like, all you're hearing are these strings. And strings are often used in songs about heartbreak because they naturally make you feel kind of sad and melancholy. But the fascinating thing about it is, it's almost like two completely different songs within the film. Like in certain scenes, it makes you feel happy. You just want to linger in those stares, in the way they like are tender and care about each other. But also, he uses it to showcase these are two people who are sad. They feel so burdened by their circumstances and like them just wanting to be with each other and be in love. All of that is done with the chord progression in Eden. It feels sorrowful. It feels heavy and important. This love and danger is almost like a burden on you, the viewer, just like it's a burden for Tish and Fonny, the characters. So you are carrying some of this burden every single time you hear it. And so this song, they use like different interpolations of it at many points throughout
the film.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
And there's this montage where they're just kind of like falling in love. It's like the closest you get to the like, this is the origin story of their love.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically just go out and spend a day together.
Man, they had the best day together. That shit had me fucked up. Beautiful. Was it fall?
Yeah.
It was like fall, New York.
So much orange and yellow.
Yes, and their skin is glowing and they're so happy. And you know they don't have no money. They're so broke. 1922, you can just feel. It takes you back and you're like, oh.
We're just like shaking our head and just smiling.
I'm fucked up.
Because it puts you in this moment. And during this montage, you're hearing a slightly different version of Eden called Agape. It's so subtly different. Like the main instrument in this one, they've changed it to a piano. Pianos in music often feel more like settled or final. And then you have like horns that come in. And so like all of these other elements, they just start pouring in and they serve as like happy flourishes. And they let that main chord progression, that sadness, that burden, it just kind of like floats to the background. It almost makes it like warmer. So you're able to like sit in these moments of Fonny staring at Tish and Tish staring at Fonny. And it just kind of like builds, almost like a cry, until you hit this almost like swell, where literally you're just like, fuck, I feel full. And that's usually when you're sobbing.
Every time they played this theme, I was crying.
That's because you haven't lost the sadness of that main chord progression. But they shift it to the back because that's not the main idea of this scene. It's about those swells of happiness. It's about them being in love. At the beginning, you know that this love is in danger. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I found really interesting about the decision to use the same song in the scenes you would typically think of as like sad or even sometimes despondent is that then when you hear it in their montage scene, you feel that happiness and that intensity of that love, but you also directly feel how dangerous it is. Mm. You cannot lose sight of the fact that, like, something is looming over these you know, two people who have this amazing thing. Mm-hmm. It is ever present. Because they're Black, because there is something that is coming for them, you can't be as happy as you would like to be. It's really powerful, I think. Mm. And it's something that the music does throughout. It always makes you feel this emotion and the intensity of that emotion, but it never lets you forget that there's something on the horizon, both happy and sometimes sad.
Mm.
Both of these movies use music in really, really effective ways. You know, A Star is Born uses it to kind of like punctuate this nature of these two people who are perfect for each other because of their talent, with music specifically. With A Star is Born, I'm still observing two people who are much better at making music.
I'm in the crowd at Coachella. Like,
yeah.
That's me.
But in If Bill Street Could Talk, I'm just supposed to feel this thing that these people are feeling.
Mm.
So when I'm watching it, I felt just a little bit more present, which is why I think it makes Bill Street work just a little better as a romance epic. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about the biggest challenge involved in making a convincing on-screen romance and how each of these movies takes that challenge on. Welcome back.
Welcome back. So we've been talking about two of the biggest epic romances of the year, A Star is Born and If Beale Street Could Talk. And I want to talk about something that I think was a hurdle for both Barry Jenkins and Bradley Cooper when they made these films. It's the big, I think, challenge that you have to account for when you're trying to make a romantic drama film. You have to sell the audience on the depth and the purity of the love of the two main characters.
Yeah.
With A Star is Born, mm-hmm. your point about their love story really being intertwined with their creative relationship is absolutely right. I think that, like, the purity of their creative bond, even if all the other shit doesn't work, if you get the two of them in front of a piano, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it just must, like, it really made me feel how intoxicating it must be for them to be able to do this together.
Yeah.
And to sort of have, like, this unending, like, creative, romantic
adventure.
Adventure, almost, yeah. Exactly. And, like, you know, I also couldn't help but think about Jay-Z and Beyonce. I can't lie. Because, like, I mean, the thing is, that, I mean, okay, we all know, I'll never let anybody forget, Jay-Z cheated on Beyonce and made her look like a whole fucking fool for a couple years, and that is not cool. But the thing is, people are always just like, oh, like, where, like, why, what could Beyonce see in him? And it's like, they are each other's unparalleled peers in so many ways. There are very few other artists who are living in any genre who can match them at that level.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what it's like to tour and, like, bring your kids with you and to be performing together and write songs together and record while you're on the road and
just
be in
play
Paris.
Something.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that's got to be, like, off the chain. And I think that in A Star is Born, they did a really good job of sort of selling me on their creative partnership and the purity of that, like, it makes, like, the passion, it makes it so, 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 so real. But also still, at the end of the day, you're still in this world that is still being explained to you. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
With Beale Street, where Barry Jenkins really shines is showcasing the purity of Tish and Fonny's love.
Mm-hmm.
they are young. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you're young and in love and you're engaged and you're looking for a place and you're pregnant, it does feel like the two of you against the world. You do feel like you want the rest of your family and your friends and the rest of the world to see that, like, just because we're young and we're in love, you don't know. It's going to be fine.
It's real.
That's like a universal feeling that I think they capture really well. Their love is so strong and so overwhelming and so overpowering. The thing, though, is it's like, it's hard to sell that.
Because
where does it come from? And where does it come from in people so young? And there's one scene that for me got to the nut of why Tish is able to love Fonny the way that she does. Mm-hmm. It's when she tells her family that she's pregnant with Fonny's baby. Tish's mother, Sharon, played by Regina King, she reacts in a very particular way.
This is a sacrament. And no, I ain't lost my mind. We are drinking to new life. Tish gonna have Fonny's baby.
The thing that makes that scene so special to me is the way that they react.
Yeah, yes.
When you think about, I think that ever since forever, a black teenage pregnant girl, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I would say is marked by society as a capital N, not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And both of Tish's parents tell her that she's a good girl and they're proud of her and they're happy for her and they want to make sure it's something she really wants to do. And they're behind her.
We're
going to figure it out. I was watching that and I was like, oh my God, my family has failed me. I have failed my family. I failed everyone in my life. Because the unwavering support to orient your life and to have your family be in such a way that everyone loves from a place without judgment, without fear, and with complete unwavering support is unusual. But it also felt very organic.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, informed everything about what Tish has to give Fonny in their relationship.
That's a great point. And it's not just informing how Tish can and does view her relationship with Fonny, it also specifically informs how you as the viewer should treat their relationship.
Mm.
Because every single thing you think you know about how this conversation is going to go tells you that her family is going to freak out and it's about to be a problem. It's about to be a mess. So when it doesn't happen like that, you're like, well, wait, they must really have something here.
Mm-hmm.
It forces you to treat their relationship as precious and like, you know, almost faded, if you will. Like it like raises stakes in such a clear way for their relationship that like, I was really, really shocked. And it's such a subtle thing, you know? Like, you could have written that scene differently and probably still told, like, a lot of the story the same way. But having the family respond in that way, like, sets you up for how to feel for so many of the other scenes, sets you up to respond to them with continuing compassion and empathy in a way that like makes the act like the enjoying the whole movie so much better.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a strangely surprising, but like rewarding, like what, 5 minutes?
It was a teachable moment. It was definitely a teachable moment. I think that a lot of times culturally parents are given a certain set of scripts, like kids are too. And it completely goes against all those conventions in a way that made me feel like, even just as a viewer looking at fictional characters in a movie, that I was like, oh, there's another way to do this.
Yeah. Like when we say every piece of this film was designed to make the love at the center of it believable and important, it's the decisions that they make. It's the way that they are shot. It's the music that plays. Mm-hmm. It's how long you linger in a scene. It's like, it's all the things spoken and unspoken in this film that just make you get it. Like, if your goal is to make you feel and believe the love that is at the center of it,
man,
there's no way you come out of If Bill Street Could Talk doubting that, you know?
No.
A Star is Born, I don't know. It could depend on how you feel about
you
Bradley
Cooper.
They
got ups and downs in that film. They got some ups and downs in there.
Yeah.
I will say, I think that A Star is Born, I know I'm going to watch that again.
Yeah.
Just to see, Bradley Cooper's never going to look that fine again. So even just to roll that back, okay, that's, he's not even my, a blonde-haired country singer is not even my type.
Yeah.
I think that goes without explaining. But I'm going to watch that movie again just to see the whole thing play out. I loved it. But there is a correct order to see movies, you definitely got to see A Star Is Born first. Mm-hmm. You got to build up. But, like, I think that that speaks to how Beale Street's love, the love between the characters, that central love story shows up.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it both. What I didn't appreciate, I don't like to be crying in public like that. So if Beale Street could talk, you just kind of... I mean, I appreciate that everybody was crying.
Everybody was crying.
But man, I was just real bare for about 2 hours there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think after it was over, I just stood in CVS. I bought myself some Pringles. I was overwhelmed.
I mean, we were trying to talk after. We were both just like,
yeah, you were like, I'll see you tomorrow. It's like,
I just needed a moment to process.
The Knot is produced by me, Brittany Lewis, with Eric Eddings and Kay Parkinson Morgan. Our senior producer is Sada Abdurrahman. We are edited by Emmanuel Berry and Jorge Jess. Engineering by Cedric Wilson. Our theme music is by Khalid B. Additional music in the show by Bobby Lord and Talkstar. Special thanks to Haley Shaw.
I'm on the deep.
That's not it.
Watch as I dive
different movie.
I'm gonna sing that talent show next year.